If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
May is National Older Americans Month. I know you know that. And I know a lot of seniors listen to the show. And this is for those of you who are seniors, but also for those of you who may have elderly parents or loved ones who need some help and need to plan for the future. Joining us in studio is one of the city's most accomplished elder law attorneys, Catherine Casey, partner at Dutton Casey and Messelaris here in Chicago. She's one of the few certified elder law attorneys in Illinois. She focuses her practice on long-term care, estate planning, special needs planning, Medicare and Medicaid issues. She's earned many, many awards and accolades. She writes and speaks frequently as an expert on these issues. Welcome, Katie. Welcome to the show.
Always a pleasure joining you in the studio, Karen.
Yeah. And so let's get right to it. We have so much to cover. Why should people get documents prepared by a lawyer for their future?
Because they want to live well. Most people associate estate planning documents with death. Most estate planning documents, however, don't deal with dying at all. They deal with living, and they deal with how you want to live to the best of your ability. We want to take control of our future.
So how so? Like, give us some examples of how these documents are going to allow people to live their best life.
Take, for example, the power of attorney for property or the power of attorney for health care, a five wishes document, a physician's order on life-sustaining treatment. These are the documents that control who's going to make decisions for you while you're alive when you can't communicate your own decisions. They're going to communicate to healthcare professionals when you want treatment, to what extent you want treatment, and what your value system is on what it means to live well and what life means and when life might end. You get to say those things in the future and direct someone to be your spokesperson while you're alive but can't communicate.
I mean, you find, I'm sure, that a lot of people don't want to face this. They don't want to face their mortality. They don't want to look at the issue of, hey, someday I might be incapacitated. How do you convince people? How do we convince listeners about the dangers and the disasters that occur? And maybe you should tell our listeners what can happen even during your lifetime if you don't get these documents in place.
Yeah, you're right, Karen. There's a lot of denial out there about the possibility that life might not go the way we want it to, that we might be living with a disability before we go. And there's a lot of reluctance to face that reality. My best advice to get someone to consider those possibilities is to lead by example. If you're trying to get a parent or a spouse to engage in planning for the future, do it for yourself first. If you're a wife and you've got a husband who's reluctant, you can still put your own documents in place. Lead by example, show them the way, and it's more likely that they're going to follow you. Another tip is to make it a normal conversation. These really are normal conversations that we should be having with our friends, with our family. We don't need to get into the nitty-gritties of how much money is in that bank account. We don't need to talk about money at all. What we need to talk about are what our values are, what it means to us to live well, and what we want to see happen to us in the future. Normalize those conversations.
Well, absolutely. And it's sort of like not a question of if, it's a question of when, you know. And I think as you get older, you come to grips with that, knowing people going through these things, and you just don't want to visit this on your spouse. You don't want to visit it on your children or your loved ones. It just is a huge burden. And if you don't care about yourself, you should care about them. Right?
Exactly. Exactly. You really are trying to protect your loved ones.
Well, can you give us a scenario, maybe something you have seen in your practice that sort of is an example of why you need these documents?
I sometimes feel like I've seen it all, and it couldn't possibly get worse. But unfortunately, these things happen all the time. People don't plan. It's so common for people not to plan. And only once they enter a crisis do they realize the importance of planning. So let me give you a couple scenarios that might motivate people out there to seize the day and get some planning in place. One heartbreaking case I saw was a couple. They'd been together for 30, maybe 40 years. They'd never gotten married for religious reasons, and they both had children from prior marriages. And they did not put any documents in place in advance, and both developed cognitive impairments, and their children from their prior marriages didn't support their relationship, didn't approve of it, and ultimately separated them at the end of their life. And that was devastating for both of them, and it was devastating to watch.
That's just horrible. Yeah. And, you know, and again, you know, you have confidence in your loved ones to do the right thing, but that, you know, death sometimes and grief, we had this conversation prior to the show, you know, sometimes grief turns, you know, siblings against each other, against the parents, and you just can't predict what's going to happen.
You can't predict, Karen, and you're right about the grief in that, particularly with an Alzheimer's diagnosis or a dementia diagnosis, people are often pre-grieving. They're grieving in advance because they've already lost a relationship. They've already lost a personality. And that grief does interfere with how they take care of their loved one and how they relate to their other family members. And it can lead to a lot of conflict.
One more question before we take a break. And that is, a lot of people think Medicare covers assisted facilities and nursing homes and that kind of thing. Can you tell our listeners what Medicare does not cover?
I wish Medicare covered everything, and maybe one day it will, but right now it does not. Essentially, Medicare is going to cover your hospitalization and up to 100 days of rehab in a skilled nursing facility if you are engaging in rehabilitative services. Beyond that, Medicare is only going to cover pharmaceuticals, hospitalization, surgeries. It doesn't provide for care in our home. And that's where people really want to be. They want to be at home. At most, they want to be in an assisted living facility, and Medicare doesn't pay for any of that care.
Yeah. Let's get your contact information. If you just tuned in, I'm talking to Catherine Casey. She is a certified elder law attorney, Dutton Casey and Messaloris. Where can people reach you?
They can reach us, Karen, at 312-899-0950.
Katie, can you please tell our listeners what's the difference between an elder law attorney and an estate planning lawyer?
So sometimes they're the same. Elder law attorneys are often also estate planning attorneys. Estate planning attorneys aren't always elder law attorneys. It's sort of like the square and the rectangle scenario, right? So an elder law attorney is going to be able to provide you with estate planning documents, but also counsel you on preparing a long-term care plan, a long-term plan for aging well. They're going to help you navigate facility contracts like nursing home contracts or assisted living contracts. They're going to assist you with special needs trusts if you have an adult disabled child or a spouse with a cognitive impairment. They'd be able to assist you with public benefits too, benefits to help you stay at home longer, benefits in a facility if you can't come home.
So it's more of a holistic approach, the elder law thing. And I imagine that when you consult with clients initially, you have to ask a lot of questions, I would imagine, right? Like, you know, what's important to you and who are your kids and what are their personalities and all of, you know, what medical issues do you have? I mean, it's kind of a broad spectrum of questions, right?
It is. And you got it in terms of what's important to you. One of my first questions to people is, who are the most important people in your life? Because those are usually the people we're going to be talking about. Those are the people we most want to protect when you come to me.
You have always talked about guardianship and how you want to avoid that. Can you tell our listeners, and you know, we see these like celebrities who have guardianships and things like that, and it, you know, just explain a little bit about how a guardianship would come about and why you want to avoid that.
Yeah, Karen, I'm sure you've heard of the expression avoiding probate, right?
Yes.
So everybody wants to avoid probate. And for probate for most people is the probate that happens after you die, the decedent's estate probate. But the fact is that guardianship is a probate proceeding. It's a probate proceeding during life. And it's very much like an after-death probate proceeding in that your life is laid out in public in front of a judge with all parties who are participating in your life able to come in and have a say about your future. This is where instead of you putting documents in place to have a say in your future, everyone in your life plus a judge plus a guardian ad litem plus the attorneys involved are having a say in your future. It's a very public proceeding.
You know, I used to sit in the guardianship court and watch sometimes. It's just, it's horrific. You have people who are disabled. Maybe they didn't put a plan in place. And all, like you said, all of these people are weighing in and spending all of your money on fees and the like, and you don't even get a say. And so I really think that that is such an important point to make here. Do you see that people who put plans together have some sense of relief? I know it's like when people avoid something and then all of a sudden they do it, they feel like, oh, I should have done this years ago. Do you get that a lot?
I do. I love watching a first-time estate planning client walk out of my office with their little three-ring binder with all of the documents in place and their game plan all charted out on how they're going to proceed, how they're going to live well, and the looks on their faces, it's as if enormous weight has been lifted from their shoulders. They walk more lightly. They're happier. They're just relieved that they've finally confronted this very difficult thing to think about, and they've conquered it.
Let's talk briefly about powers of attorney. Can you explain what a power of attorney is, the two main types, and about whether you need a lawyer to actually have these things drafted up?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked, Karen, because in my opinion, powers of attorney are the most important documents in estate planning, and they're the ones that are least talked about. They're what I call the living documents. Powers of attorney are where you name someone to make your decisions for you while you're still alive. So the power of attorney for property gives another person control over your bill payment if you can't pay your bills, over your investment decisions, over your real estate. They will manage your financial life if you can't. And the healthcare power of attorney will decide the person who is going to communicate with your doctors and make life and death decisions on your behalf.
So how do you counsel people in the people that are chosen to be powers of attorney? And the reason I'm asking, I get a lot of listeners who call and say, my brother's power of attorney, but he's siphoning off money. He's not being transparent. He's doing things that are unfair. You know, how do you pick the right person? Is it always a family member, or is it better sometimes not to have a family member?
Excellent question. And this is a good reason to consult with a lawyer before you do these documents. So you don't necessarily have to have a lawyer to do the documents, but you should get a lawyer to answer this exact question, which is, who in my life is the best person to do this job? I recommend to people that they take into consideration the people in their lives and who's the person who is the most trustworthy and the most likely to respect our wishes. They don't necessarily have to be geographically close to us, but they do need to have a respect for our wishes, and they need to be loyal and trustworthy to us so that we can count on them to make good decisions.
And so let's talk a little bit about adult disabled children. And we have so much to talk about, and we're going to have you come back on. But a lot of people have children, adult children who may be autistic or may have been in an accident and is not going to be able to live independently. And I know that's a huge concern of aging parents. What kinds of things can be done to protect them?
We have to be very, very careful in planning for our children. There are a lot of diagnoses out there, and with children, we don't always know, right? We don't always know what that diagnosis is going to mean for the duration of their entire lives. I like to counsel my clients to try to plan just for the next 5 years. What if something happens just in the next 5 years? Based on what we know about your child, do we put a special needs trust in place? Maybe we put a support trust in place. We want to balance protecting our child with making sure our child has the opportunity to live an independent and autonomous life.
And that's a good point, that you sometimes can't plan that far in advance, and you might have to go back and amend the plan given, what developments there are down the line. So as far as cost goes, and people always want to compare costs of attorneys, what would be a range for a full estate plan and for, somebody like you, an elder law attorney certified, which is very rare in Illinois? What are we talking about?
So, at our law firm, we judge fees after meeting with our client and determining what their needs are. I can tell you that minimally, most people who are coming to our office are going to be paying at least $1,000 in legal fees for estate planning services. That's really a minimum. And it can go up from there, depending on the complexity of the situation. On average, an estate plan should be a few thousand dollars.
I mean, absolutely. And again, people say, I want to do it online. That's a no, right?
The documents that you're going to get from your attorney are not just, they're not just pieces of paper with words on them like you can get off the internet. What you're paying an attorney for is wisdom, experience, and advice for your particular situation.
Absolutely.